Thanks for listening to the Get Over Yourself podcast, brought to you by Carol Fit Stationary Bike Program, 8-minute workouts to get super fit. Perfect Keto, the cleanest, highest potency ketone supplements. MOFO, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Let's get checked at home testing kits. Try LGC.com. Almost Heaven, beautiful compact home use sauna kits. Brad's macadamia masterpiece, the mind-blowing nut butter blend. And check out bradkearns.com/shop, my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance. And here we go with the show.
Fasting is a hard thing to sell a product around. So anything you read about fasting, you know it's the truth, because no one's trying to sell you anything, because literally you eat nothing. So it's hard for somebody to have a marketing budget behind that. But let's give everybody a little brief on oxalates. Like, the way an animal keeps you from eating it is it runs away, or at least it tries. And then the way a plant keeps you from eating it is it gives you a mild toxin, so at some point you're like, I'm sick of eating this, and you go away. What do we really want when we exercise? We want to change our bodies. We want to make the human body a more powerful, more efficient, more disease-free machine.
Hey listeners, get ready for a very interesting and intriguing show with Dr. John Jaquish. He is the inventor of the recent fitness sensation called the X3 Bar. He also invented the globally popular OsteoStrong training device that's been helping to fight osteoporosis for many years. This guy is out there on the cutting edge of inventing incredible medical and fitness training devices, thinking freely and outside the box. So you are going to hear from a very hard-hitting, straight-shooting, and fearless free-thinking fitness leader who is not afraid to call BS and challenge many of our basic notions and long-held beliefs about how to pursue fitness goals. So we'll talk a little bit about his amazing X3 bar, which is revolutionizing strength training because it allows you to work the range of motion with the highest power output with the maximum resistance, which is the exact opposite of lifting a heavy bar. To get the heavy bar off your chest, that's the hardest part because that's your least power output. And then when you're at the top of the lift is when you have your highest power output. So by using a heavy, heavy elastic strap that requires more and more force to stretch, it allows you to work much harder in a much shorter duration workout. And let me tell you, I like stuff like that because I want to get in there, work hard and get it done and do the stuff that I really have fun with, like sprinting and high jumping and playing sports. So if you're not inclined to want to spend hours in the gym working those muscles and lifting the heavy weights, oh my gosh, this kind of innovation is really exciting to learn about. And I'm telling you, this guy is going to blow your mind because he has an amazing propensity to look at things differently, think freely, think outside the box, and innovate, and second guess, and progress the fitness culture accordingly. Get a load of his dietary strategy. He eats once every 48 hours with a full-on carnivore feast. So he's in this tight, closed-loop system, maintaining his amazingly muscular physique. He comes in at 6 foot and 240 with single-digit body fat, and he's only training for 10 minutes a day to build this massive physique and extremely healthy with all the fasting benefits that you get. So this is going to be a wide-ranging show with a lot of amazing insights that will definitely get you to think twice about the basic notions of diet and fitness and getting big and recovering, all kinds of fun stuff. Check out his new book too. It's called Weight Training is a Waste of Time. Of course, wouldn't you know it, a title like that from a free thinking guy like Dr. John, and it's already a sensation on Amazon, became a bestseller as soon as it came out here in late summer 2020. So Dr. John Jaquish, inventor of the X3 bar, author of Weight Training is a Waste of Time. Dr. John Jaquish, I am here at X3 World Headquarters.
That's right.
Such a pleasure to join you in your super high-tech studio.
Thanks.
Especially with the lighting. I think we look particularly good with this professional lighting. It's amazing that we don't even have makeup, but we look super sharp.
Well, we're just handsome guys.
Like, that too.
Yeah.
It's a strong starting point.
Yeah,
and I got all kinds of fun stuff to talk to you about.
Okay.
Your videos are fantastic on YouTube. You're a straight
Thank
shooter. You.
You
hit those Q&As hard.
I do.
And you call out the BS in the fitness industry.
That's right. There's a lot of it.
Of which there is
easy.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost everything.
That's a strong statement, but if you start breaking it down, and some of those sound bites I got from you, it's
yeah. Well, a lot of the big picture stuff, like cardio for fat loss, like that's just like I could write a book about just that. I mean, the section, like, you know, 30 days, my book comes out. Henry's co-author on that.
Yeah. What's the title?
And it's called Weightlifting is a Waste of Time. And then the subtitle is, and so is cardio. There's a better way to get the body warm.
Mm-hmm. Besides that, have fun in the gym.
Yeah. Right. So many things are just gross misinterpretations of research. Like just the simplification of looking at calories. Like, is counting calories good or bad? I could write a book about just that question. Right there, like calories matter, macronutrients also matter, micronutrients matter a lot less than we've been told, but like a calorie is a unit of energy meant to drive the processes in our body is like looking at calories like you're putting fuel in a car. A car is a very simple machine. It's also not alive. So that's a very overly simplified way. And overly simplified is a term that's a nice way of saying wrong. So it's wrong. Like, you just can't look at the body like calories are fuel. Okay, a lot of things can be fuel. You know, your skin can be fuel. You can metabolize your own skin. Like, I have a huge scar on this shoulder from a branding, my fraternity. Oh. It was an honor. You know, you get elected president, you get the brand. I didn't regret it. It was cool. But this thing, since I've been doing, I eat one meal every 48 hours. Uh-huh. Since I started doing that fasting, I go into long periods of autophagy. Mm-hmm. The scar is actually eating itself from the inside. So it's like for 20 years it had been there.
Yeah.
That's, you know, when I was president of my fraternity 20 years ago. Is that right? Yeah. About. And then a little less than that. And then it's been the same ever since it healed up in the fraternity house. And then all of a sudden it's like disappearing to the point where I can be at the swimming pool and somebody doesn't even see it. And before it had a thick scar raised off of my skin, you know, like a quarter millimeter, like you'd see it, like there's a shadow underneath it.
So they're gonna have to get you again, is I guess you're gonna have to go back to the reunion.
Yeah,
get
well, I'd like to see
or
them
not
try. Yeah, I won't want it a second time. I got them once already. It's cool.
So this one meal every 48 hours at the level that you're burning calories and building muscle and preserving mm-hmm. muscle. That's a fascinating strategy. How did you come to that? That's out there, man.
So it has to do with looking at what happens during fasting. There's a lot of myths around fasting, and fasting is a hard thing to sell a product around. So anything you read about fasting, you know it's the truth, because no one's trying to sell you anything, because literally you eat nothing. So it's hard for somebody to have a marketing budget behind that. But it, you know, like though I have seen fasting mimicking products.
Right, with a powder included.
Right. Like bars and stuff, and it mimics fasting. It's like, no, it doesn't. Like, that's stupid. So when you're fasting, you're not consuming any calories. There's a caveat to that. There's a 50 calorie. Yeah,
same thing. With the misappropriation of the term is hilarious, because know, I'm on a brown rice fast. I'm on a coffee fast. I'm on a juice fast.
Right.
Well, that's an oxymoron.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, coffee has no calories, so.
Well, I guess you could be on a, right, I'm on
yeah,
a.
Yeah, that's, you know, the idea
dog
is.
Dog walking fast or something.
Absence of calories. Right. Or,
and so you're at once every 48 hours, is that's your caloric consumption.
Yeah. Whew.
And then when it's time to eat, man. Maybe we want to be invited over for that, huh?
Yeah, sometimes the chefs come out and watch the guy eat everything he ordered because they can't believe he can. So, like, yeah, when I go to, like, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, I get the 40-ounce porterhouse.
They have that hidden off the menu?
They call it the porterhouse for two, but I ate it by myself. Uh-huh. And then I get two orders of shrimp on top of that. So, you know, like probably like 8 ounces of shrimp or maybe 6 ounces of shrimp and then 40 ounces of porterhouse.
And you're also in a highly carnivore-ish where you're not eating many carbs even at these feasts.
So I think even though I've tried to explain this very carefully, my words get misinterpreted because it's like the news. People want to watch the news that tells them that they're right. Not the truth. They want very little to do with the truth. So I can just tell, you know, by like, I hear something from one of my friends and I'm like, I'm guessing you heard that on CNN because there's no accuracy to that at all. Like that's just a Google search, like can disprove that. Like, you know, but it's like they want to watch, you know, what makes them feel better.
Yeah.
So, and people want nutrition, which makes them feel better. In fact, if you look at keywords that pop up on Google, it's like diet where I can eat anything I want.
that's
one of the top things. Like you don't have to type very much of that, and bang, the whole sentence like shows up. Right, and it's like they want to figure out how they can do everything they did to get really fat. Yet somehow get the opposite result, which is
have cake and eat it too.
Right. Yeah, there we go. Have cake and eat it too. Right.
So this feast is what's the composition? Is it meat oriented?
No, 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
I pretty much don't eat anything.
You're a carb free human.
So carbohydrates have two purposes. Well, I should say three purposes. Because I'm sitting next to an endurance athlete.
Former endurance athlete, thank you. After I listened to Dr. John.
That's right. You're doing much better now. You're
one
up
minor
on your
that
joints.
Got me was, cardio burns up muscle.
Yeah.
And preserves fat or causes you to store fat.
Right.
And we never thought about it in those terms.
You're right. Like cardio, it's the uphill battle.
Yeah.
It's.
That's called aging. You want to call it. You know, a related term.
Yeah,
the essence of aging is, you know.
Yeah, well,
losing muscle mass.
Right. Yeah. And it accelerates aging. That's I've seen that.
Oh,
I've seen that documented where it's like
I had
like
no wrinkles before my career started and no gray hair either. Yeah.
Right. Oh, there's a guy in the fitness industry. His name's Fred Sebright. He's a handsome chap. He has the same haircut, and he's I think he just retired. And he worked for, I shouldn't say who he worked for because I might screw this up. But great guy. And I would stand up on stage. I'd bring him up on stage and I'd say, this is Fred. Fred's my twin brother. Of course, he looks a lot older than me. I'm like, he got married. That's how all this shit happened. So, you know, keep that in mind. Yeah. I distracted myself. What the hell are we talking about?
I'm still curious how you came to this eating pattern.
Carbohydrates, yes. Yeah. So there's three things carbohydrates can do for you. And I have a very different approach and view of type 2 diabetes. And it's based on an observation of bears, like brown bears, black bears, grizzly bears. A bear will give itself type 2 diabetes every year.
Chowing those berries?
That's right. They only eat the berries at the end.
Berries.
Right. At the end of the summer.
Right.
Right before the winter, like the fall time, I guess.
Yeah.
And so they give, like, now, of course, that's when carbohydrates show up. So they'd probably eat it all year long, except the problem is when they give themselves type 2 diabetes, it's a mode your body goes into to get you as fat as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe type 2 diabetes is a dysfunction of the human body. I believe it's a function of the human body. Because in nature, carbohydrates, most places in the world, only show up for a couple weeks right at the end of the fall before it starts to get really cold. So getting as fat as possible is a survival mechanism because bears hibernate, so they don't have a choice. They're not going to eat anything because they're just sitting in a hole. So that's part of it. The other part of it is the more adipose tissue you have, the better chance of surviving the cold you have. So it's not like type 2 diabetes is not a disease. I mean, right, from my perspective,
human evolutionary advantage.
Right. It's huge. Something you can trigger so that you can get as fat as possible. Because you want to get as fat as possible to survive the winter. Now, we don't live like that anymore. We have, like, buildings and air conditioning.
What, winter,
Right, we don't, Yeah, and also, we live in California. And, I mean, you know, other than the terrible taxes, weather's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't have to necessarily worry about freezing to death. But when you look at the bear model, now, animal models... You don't want to look at an animal model and say, that's what we should eat, because we're not any animal other than human. But it's a great example. And you also know that animals aren't screwing up their own studies like people are by, like, lying about what they ate and drank, which people notoriously do, because they want to believe that they are doing something that they might not exactly be doing. So, you know, survey-based studies is like, all right, well... Maybe. But animals, like, you know, a bear didn't go out drinking every night.
Right.
You know, a bear didn't order pizza instead of hunting deer because they just don't do that. I mean, at least I've never seen one.
Right.
So that's really the main purpose of carbohydrates.
It's to get you fat.
And right. It's to get you fat. Now, there's two exceptions to that. When you do really extensive endurance, you gotta have immediate fuel because you've burned up all your muscle glycogen. And how quick did you burn up your glycogen?
Takes hours.
Yeah, hours. Yeah. And then if you want to keep going, you
need some sugar.
You need some sugar, right?
Yeah. This show is sponsored by the... No, it's not. Sorry.
No.
But you get your gel or your drink.
Yeah,
and you keep going.
Your gel pack or whatever. And it's basically like a liquid candy bar.
Yeah.
And then you can keep going because your body can metabolize that. But you're basically limping along at that point. Like, that's... Now, all sports have a tendency to, at the most extreme degree, cast health aside for sake of the victory. You know,
sure.
How many football players sacrifice their joints so they can play, you know, one more season? All of them.
Yeah. If I don't, then I'm
the other
cut
guy will.
And
right,
some other guy will.
Yeah,
same with endurance.
Right.
I'm gonna go a little more further on the bike than the next guy and burn up your hormones and everything else.
Right.
So that was the other purpose for carbs, is to contribute to the fueling of extreme endurance.
Mm-hmm.
And did you say there was three purposes?
The third purpose, I would say, is hydrating. Like, you can hydrate with sodium. Like, sodium's a lot of different places, and we do get plenty of it, and you cramp if you don't have mostly sodium, though there are other electrolytes. But if you want to hydrate a muscle, you can hydrate it like after you deplete glycogen, and then you can actually have a slight acceleration of growth. So, like, there's a protocol that's in the book where I talk about using vasodilator like an hour before a workout, and then doing your workout and then having a very limited amount of carbohydrates is calculated based on your body weight. And then you can have more blood flow into the muscle, which delivers more nutrients. And you have a little bit more growth.
Okay, so raise your hand out there if you ascribe to any of those three. Not many people.
No, really most people just eat carbohydrates because they have no self-control. Or they have the self-control of a child. I see the addiction like everywhere. And the foods are engineered to be addictive. So it's not like, I'm not saying the average person is just a loser. I'm saying the average person got sucked into the addictive food pattern and doesn't want to believe that they should break it.
Right. I mean, what would you say to the huge plant-based advocate who thinks that blueberries, broccoli, kale leaves are essential to human health?
I'd say prove it. Yeah, I'd say show me the micronutrients that you're taking in and why you need those.
Yeah, I mean,
because there's no proof to any of that.
It's getting disproven now with the carnivore movement, I think, very effectively.
Very effectively, yeah.
Or, I mean, Dr. Casey Means used this term, redundant pathways. Saladino says the same thing, where you do get an antioxidant response from consuming the broccoli. It's highly validated, and isn't that great? But you also get the same from jumping into cold water and getting that hormetic stressor.
Or
fasting.
I got a slightly different perspective. You only need antioxidants if you're oxidizing. So because the carnivore diet is anti-inflammatory, there's no inflammatories in there's no oxalates. So you take in oxalates with vegetables, which give you inflammation.
Right.
And then you got to go all over the world to get your antioxidants. Right? It's like you're taking the poison and the antidote.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's being sarcastic.
I mean, hopefully you're following this, listener, because the plants have natural toxins. This is also undisputed. This is not just Dr. John popping off.
Right.
So
thank you for that.
You get kind of a, you get benefits, but you also have some, there's a stressor aspect to it. And, you know, we've been socialized to envision the blueberry as the antioxidant powerhouse of the diet.
Right.
But it's because it's stimulating a defensive response.
Right. And other vegetables every plant has oxalates. Basically, let's give everybody a little brief on oxalates. Like, the way an animal keeps you from eating it is it runs away, or at least it tries. And then the way a plant keeps you from eating it is it gives you a mild toxin. So at some point you're like, I'm sick of eating this and you go away. And this is true of animals. Now they have higher tolerances for oxalates, but, if you can engineer food so that has less oxalates, the animals have less inflammation too. Yeah. No, I mean, like a herbivore has got tolerance to oxalates that's through the roof, whereas we do not. Which I think does help indicate that we're much better with much more animal protein. And also, the tragedy of the plant-based diet, like the Western diet is already 70% plant-based because bread is plant-based. A lot of candy bars are plant-based.
Concentrated calories.
Yeah. I mean, what's chocolate? That's plant-based.
Yeah.
So the reason you hear so much about the benefits of plant-based nutrition is because there's some studies on it that were funded by Nabisco. Now, why does Nabisco want everybody to be a vegan? It's because Nabisco knows that vegans don't eat blueberries and kale most of the time. Most of the time, they're just inhaling, you know, like
grain-based
candy bars and crap.
Yeah.
It's like Triscuits and cookies and it's like, oh, it's vegan. Like I know a couple of vegans that will go through a sleeve of Oreos in 5 minutes and they're like, it's vegan.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, like Oreo cookies, like that's like that and obesity go like hand in hand. Like it's just sugar.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? But that's what they think. So, So probably not the listeners of your podcast fall into that category, but I'm blown away when I see vegans just like Oreo cookies. They're amazing. Yeah, they're amazingly
We all
terrible.
Tiptoe and dance in these areas. I mean, no one's perfect, and especially the average person doesn't have time to live and breathe this stuff all the time.
Yep.
But in your case, you know, you're a thought leader, right? And so you've stumbled upon this 48-hour pattern. Mm-hmm. I assume that you feel like this is giving you the maximum health benefits, inflammation control, even performance, because you're super concerned about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, how did you come on the 48 hours
of... I did some trial and error, and I looked at where like the benefits of fasting kind of maximized and then started to drop off a little bit. So like the growth hormone goes up at like 36 hours, really high, like 2,000% increase. Mm. And then begins to drop off after that, kind of level out. There's sort of a general question I have where I'd really like to talk to some nutrition experts. And the problem is most nutrition experts I know, they have far more questions than answers that they can't get answered. So, I mean, I don't blame it. It's a hard industry because, you know, like epidemiology is like one of the lowest forms of research, you know, surveys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because you can't take a group of people and put them in a cage and feed them exactly what you want, you know.
We've done that a few times with Dr. Cahill and the starvation experiments that date back to the 60s and data.
Yeah, back, that's all we got though.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we have some very old research on that kind of thing where like people had to be like basically imprisoned.
And now we have Dr. John doing it for you in real time, 2020, baby.
Yeah, right.
Once every 2 days, a feast or famine pattern.
Right, right.
What about the exercise? How does that layer in? I mean, you feel great and have level energy for 47 hours after your meal. Must take an hour to eat.
So it takes an hour to eat. I think last night I went to a steakhouse.
I go, watch out. Here he comes. He's pulling up.
Yeah, I ordered four.
We can hear his car coming a block away. No kidding.
Yeah.
And then they roll out the table for you.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I had four steaks.
Four steaks.
And some shrimp also.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the alternate source of... No. I had four steaks, and then I had an appetizer, which was also steak. It was just cut with, I want to say, some watercress sauce, which is kind of nothing.
Yeah.
But it's got a good taste to it. Yeah.
So then you wake up the next day, and and you're doing your thing.
I work out as normal, just fasted. All right, I worked out this morning.
Yeah. And let's talk about your workout regimen. Yeah. It's very simple.
Very simple. You use the X3 for 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Four sets, yeah.
Five, 6 days a week. What do you do?
6 days a week, yeah.
So you do four sets?
Yeah.
So like those familiar with the device have the workout one and the workout two, incredibly simple.
Right.
And the whole thing takes 10 minutes.
It takes me a little bit longer because the larger a muscle becomes... the more blood it needs to function correctly.
Okay.
So this is part
10 minutes for me.
Here, let me throw another
15 the doc.
Let me give another myth of the fitness industry. Huh. You hear guys who are really all about cardio saying, "Oh, strength athletes, you know, they have no endurance, so they have." Their bad hearts are all going to die of a heart attack. You hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's total BS. In fact, the strength athlete, there is research that supports this statement. The strength athlete might actually have a healthier cardiovascular system. But the illusion of poor endurance comes from large musculature. Because, like, I run up a flight of stairs and, like, blood is pumping into my glutes, into my calves, and into my quads, which are tremendous. They're huge.
Right.
And so because those muscles are so big, you know, I might run up 5-6 flights of stairs, and I'm like gassed when I get to the top. Like, really breathing hard.
You took 240 pounds up the stairs.
Right. Whereas, I weigh 240 pounds. And
Kipchoge weighs 120. So he can kick your butt in a marathon.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. He can run up six flights of stairs and it's just like,
yeah,
you know, nothing happened.
I see. Okay. Right.
So but, you know, his legs
have poor cardio.
Right.
But if you did like a weight neutral event, like Sean Baker's setting the world record in rowing with a large amount of mass, but he's not carrying it along.
Right.
Even the Tour de France, the guys who are sprinting are way bigger than the guys who climb the mountains because they just put out more power. Their cardio is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's just no, there's no penalty due to the weight bearing or the muscle size.
Right.
Yeah. You get that, people? That's a good, I like that comeback.
Yeah.
You see a guy lugging down the street, a bodybuilder, and you're like, wow, how pathetic. But he's running with 240 pounds and you're running with 127.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So the cardio is very healthy. You don't have that risk of scarring and inflammation from overdoing it like the endurance world is highly concerned about.
No.
And then you have the strength.
When I do my workout, like I actually try not to do it on video all that often because I'm like gasping for air when I'm done with it. When I really do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can, you know, fake it like a lot of people do in you know, like lifting videos, and I was talking to Leo Costa this morning, the bodybuilder, the guy who wrote Serious Growth. I was on his podcast, and he was talking about how I made some comment about like the CrossFit weights, you know, the plastic weights that all look like they weigh 45 pounds.
Yeah, right.
But they're really like 5 pounds or 10 pounds or 15 or whatever.
They
all look the same, right?
Yeah.
And so you see somebody who doesn't look athletic at all, and then they look like they're doing reps with 300 pounds, and you find out it's really like 80 pounds. So apparently they'd have these like strength shows where they'd have like a 145-pound dumbbell, and they'd invite these bodybuilders. You know, from, this is like back in like the probably the 80s. He didn't tell me when, but I know when he was a competitive athlete. They're made out of plastic. They were all fake. So like the stagehand would carry it away.
Yeah.
Who was like a guy who never worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, just some little guy. Yeah.
Just for entertainment.
Right. But nobody saw it.
Right.
So they would do these shows of strength. And my, you know, my point is working out when you have, you know, when you're, it's just not pretty is my point.
Yeah.
Like I'm so out of breath and so just devastated at the end of a set. Like,
yeah.
Like some people, I don't want them seeing that because they'll be like, wow, I don't want to do that. Well, yeah, you won't do that because you won't get as winded as I am because you don't have 240 pounds of muscle blood is pumping to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then that's why I explain that, just not show it.
But the nature of the workout, I got to say, it was hard for me to conceive that a system like this could deliver the results of much more prolonged and seemingly, you know, complex workouts.
Right.
But the way this resistance concept works with the X3 bar, you told me I was going to be fried after one set.
Yeah.
And you can't really fully experience it until the next day.
Yeah.
I think I wrote you, I went for a swim. I did the bench press, did the tricep thing, and then I went for a swim, and like I almost couldn't make it across the lake because the sense of fatigue in my muscles was like nothing you ever experienced.
Yeah, it takes 36 hours to really recover from a weight workout.
Yeah.
And grow.
Uh-huh.
Have growth be complete.
Yeah.
So
why is the maneuvering the resistance straps giving you a more complete or more challenging workout in a short time hoisting the heavy bars?
Right. The way the product is designed, we had to produce heavier latex bands than ever had existed. So really thick, but the heaviest one that we have, the Elite Band.
Military grade.
that one will deliver like 600 pounds in a deadlift.
Yeah.
And because like Dr. Baker, you know, he's 6'4", so he stretches it further. So it's over 700 pounds for him.
Oh, sure. Your height is going to be a factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm 6 foot, so yeah. It's 6'15" for me in the deadlift. But that delivering force where your body is designed to handle incredible forces, and then discharging that force where your body is less able. Mm-hmm. And it was all based on my research that I did in London for the medical device I created 13 years ago. So when looking at that data, we want to exhaust the musculature to the most complete degree. We want the greatest, most powerful stimulus. So what we do is we exhaust first the strongest range of motion with a very high weight. And then the weight's changing as you're moving. Mm-hmm. So then we do mid-range repetitions with a weight that might be half or, two-thirds that.
And that's what gets you.
Yeah. Oh, that's so devastating.
Yeah.
And then the last repetition, one or two repetitions, may only be like an inch. Right. In the weaker range of motion. Right. Where normally you'd be prone to injury if you were holding a regular weight, but
right.
But you can go to a deeper level of fatigue because by the time you're that exhausted, you're not using a very high weight in the weaker range of motion.
Right.
So like my first reps in my chest press are 540 pounds, and I'll do 20 of those.
That's the effective tension on the band at maximum tension.
Yeah.
Watch the videos, people.
Yeah.
We're not going to do gesturing here on this video, but watch the X3 videos. But I think the concept was easily embraced by me because I'm thinking of, I can't get five. You told me I was chest pressing 230 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can only bench press 125
with a
bar because I can't get it the first few inches.
Right.
So you were describing.
But if somebody handed it to you at the top.
At the top. And then I'm really putting out.
Yeah,
the last
you can
six
handle
inches,
it there, but you can't handle it at the bottom, even if you tried an eccentric contraction.
Yeah.
Lowering it, you'd probably tear your pec or your tricep on the way down.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it's a weight you, by definition, can't handle. So what we need is a weight that changes as we move it.
Right.
And that's what X3 really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because there's some people that work out so they can talk about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, these are ego-driven people. So they do like a really crummy form, set. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, I squatted 800 pounds for two reps. And you look at the video and you're like, no, you put 800 pounds on a bar and you like unracked it and suffered for about 10 seconds and then re-racked it and called it two reps. And there's people all over the internet like that. And I think, those people are just clowns. So what do we really want when we exercise? We want to change our bodies. Mm-hmm. We want to make the human body a more powerful, more efficient, more disease-free machine, capable of greater outputs. So right now there's I'm helping 7 NFL players completely switch away from weights and use X3. Actually, it's more than that now. I think it's 8, and it's about to be a couple more because the more. These guys all talk to each other.
Yeah.
Even amongst teams because they get traded so often.
Uh-huh.
So they have friends on other teams. And it's like, oh, hey, you got to check out this X3.
Yeah.
So I love working with NFL players because they don't care how much they bench press.
Right.
They care how they play. So actually being stronger, I wish I could request Instagram and Facebook to just not allow stupid comments from stupid commenters who talk about how much they bench press, because unless you're a competitor in the sport of the bench press, it doesn't matter. Being stronger matters.
Yeah.
And that's very poorly measured by what you bench press. And mostly because if you become risk averse, you turn like 25 and start thinking about what you do.
Yeah.
And then you're like, whoa, I'm risking injury here, so I'm going to train lighter. Well, then you stop growing.
Right.
That's why people stop growing. They start training lighter.
Right.
So there's no getting away from heavy. So X3 allows that even heavier than you would normally get weight, but it's strategic in where it puts the weight on your body so that you're guaranteed a much greater level of growth.
So the most difficult part for the with the bar is, let's say, the starting point, getting the bar off your chest or getting it off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the easiest part with the X3 because you're not pulling the strap yet.
Well, there's some tension.
There's a little tension,
but like I said, in my chest press, it's 540 pounds at the top, 300 pounds in the middle, and 100 uh-huh. pounds at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a really strong guy, so 100 pounds for a chest press is, you know, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So I breeze right through that. Now, in the last couple reps, that 100 pounds becomes very heavy because I fatigued the rest of the musculature. And, you know, I don't know how technical your audience appreciates, but that gives us the benefit of periodization in one set because we're taking the muscle in the stronger range of motion to myofibril fatigue,
uh-huh.
which is growing the density of the cell.
And through heavy lifting, few reps.
Well, it's from the fatigue of the cellular structure. Like, I don't want to oversimplify because remember, oversimplification is a nice way of saying
could be
wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah. So we fatigue in the range of motion where we can handle the most weight.
Okay.
Now, we're not running out of contractile fuel. We're not running out of oxygen. We're getting the muscle to the point where the structure of the cell starts to say, no, 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 no. We're going to start shutting some cells off and limiting your capacity as you go to fatigue.
Yeah.
Then you have less cells working or less cells working at 100% efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do the mid-range repetitions so that you're exhausting the fuels in the cell, the mm-hmm. ATP, the glycogen, and the creatine phosphate.
Mm-hmm.
That affects muscular endurance.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I say muscular endurance, I don't mean like endurance, like, mm-hmm. like, you know.
It's you like do. A high rep.
Yeah,
workout. So you're doing high and you're doing
it's
heavy
like,
at the same.
Right. It's same like
set.
A low rep explosive workout.
Yeah.
While at the same time, a higher rep blood volume type workout. All at
yeah.
once.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just depends on which portion of the set that you're in.
So that's what I'm feeling 24 to 36 hours later.
Yeah.
Is this, total depletion of the energy fuels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And the, what were the two types of cell growth? There's the
myofibril.
The myofibril.
And sarcoplasmic.
And sarcoplasmic is size.
Yeah.
So you're getting bigger, and then the myofibril is more density inside.
More, yeah, that's like a gymnast has incredible myofibril growth,
right?
Because they have a high power to weight ratio,
right?
That's how you know that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. A lot of lower weight class lifters will have that, like competitive
sure.
weightlifters.
Yeah,
very explosive. They also really work on the neurology of the lift.
Hmm.
So a lot of drills to basically get the weight moving with momentum and then jump underneath it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so much technique. Like golfers think there's a lot of technique in a golf swing. Look at a clean and jerk.
Right.
Like way more.
Yeah.
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 And you have to be exact. You know, you screw up your golf swing, you slice into the woods. You screw up your clean and jerk and you have maybe a life-changing injury. So, right. Yeah, that's a serious, you don't get into that sport if you're not willing to accept that there is potential injury everywhere.
Well, even lifting the heavy bar in a moderate level for someone my age, I come around and get sore so frequently that it's really disappointing because this impacts my main goals of doing sport-specific training, high jump, sprinting,
yeah.
whatever. And, I know how important it is to put my body under heavy resistance load, but to have something that's going to have that massively reduced risk of any kind of injury or muscle soreness,
right.
I think that's where the huge attractiveness is, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So why is this going to have less risk of that muscle soreness, muscle damage than doing sets with heavy bars?
So, this is another thing that really, really irritates people who have been lifting weights for years. The idea of muscle damage. Now, an endurance athlete gives him or herself more muscle damage than a weightlifter. So why don't they grow big muscles? In fact, they're pretty much losing muscle most of the time instead of gaining it. damage is inversely related to growth.
Whew.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea so that you go in...
soreness is not good?
Soreness is not good or bad because soreness is our perception of what's going on as opposed to what actually is going on. Here's something funny. You can't feel lactic acid. So when people are like, oh, I'm sore because of all the lactic acid. No. No, you're sore because of damage.
Yeah.
So it's, lactic acid is not, you know, acid like, you know, in like an espionage film where somebody gets acid thrown in their face and then they look like a monster after that. It's not like that. So damage needs to be attenuated by protein synthesis. This is where people made the mistake of assuming because protein synthesis is happening, you're growing. You're not growing. You're just repairing the damage.
Mm-hmm.
And only when the damage is repaired, you can grow. But you can only go through so much protein synthesis in a given period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If you can fatigue the muscle without damaging the muscle, then all of the protein synthesis is appropriated for growth.
Uh-huh.
And there's multiple studies on this, been out for a long time, and yet the fitness industry has no clue, none. In fact, I've never heard anybody say it.
Huh?
Yeah, I think there might have been a Testosterone Nation article that referenced it, but kind of explained it maybe incorrectly. But then every once in a while, they also have some of the researchers do articles to explain what the article means. This is one of the problems with academic research is it's not, I'll give it to people for, you know, they don't want to read it because it's hard to read.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're not conditioned to read that and you don't know anything about statistics, it'll take you a week to understand a study, like one.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I might read 50 studies in a day.
Wow.
But that's what I do.
Yeah.
So, like, it becomes faster. I know the difference between a Spearman-Rowe statistical test and an analysis of variance. But a lot of people just see those acronyms and they Google it. And then there's like 5 pages of statistics lessons to understand what a Spearman-Rowe test is and how it works and why you would choose it. And they're like, oh, to hell with this. I'm not doing this. I'm not reading this. So I get it, but you know, every once in a while, but ultimately the industry just fails to pick up on these things.
Yeah.
In fact, when I've been to the annual Congress of the American College of Sports Medicine a number of times, and I've talked to some of the leadership, and their number one pain point of the American College of Sports Medicine is it's so difficult for them to get the fitness industry to pay attention to what's being published in their journals. Like they're the ones that, you know, the ACSM has a couple of different journals and they're all fantastic. Then there's the Journal of Applied Physiology, which is not an ACSM journal, but it's the top, like the best. And then there's the European Journal of Applied Applied Physiology. There's a couple European sports science journals. They all have the same problem. It's that the people who are leading the general population in exercise science don't read anything.
Mm-hmm.
Not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And or they might read articles written by bodybuilders, which are potentially not even written by the actual bodybuilder. They just borrow his name.
Or they're succeeding in spite of themselves, which I see a lot in endurance scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where the championship collegiate running program is destroying young people year after year.
But it doesn't care because they graduate.
Right, it's, right. Or it's four of them survive.
Right, right.
And 17 of them do mediocre and 12 of them get injured, but they don't care because the four are winning the races. And it's, you know, ignoring a lot of science and going by, you know, the model of the elite athletes, which may be highly flawed even today. Yeah. I mean, you got 9 NFL players, but you don't have 309. But if you did, there may be less guys on the sidelines or having joint problems from messing around. Remember Stephon?
Oh, absolutely. Like, they all make the same comment. the ones that are sticking with it 100%, like, my joints have never felt better. Mm. And I'm actually stronger than, when you know, like, when I entered the league. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do need to get a lot more of those guys. And I need now, I will say that strength coaches are much better about like reading research and understanding what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like they read the scientific journals. Like strength coaches are typically people with masters or PhDs mm-hmm. in sports science, different well, yeah. than what I studied, but. They do want to really get a better understanding because mm-hmm. it's their job, and they want an edge on the other strength coaches.
A lot of them are athletic too, I notice, themselves, which lends some credibility. And if you're roaming around an NFL locker room, you probably don't want to be
overweight,
a nerd with glasses and no physique, right? They're putting things to the test themselves.
Yeah.
So a 10-minute workout. I know we got to get you rolling to your next point in your busy day, but that's got to have a ton.
I got 10 more minutes.
A ton of hormonal benefits. So we're gonna have 10 more minutes of it'll simulate a X3 workout. This is how short the workout is, people. From here to the end of the show. Oh my goodness! But the big deal in endurance was the destruction of immune function and hormonal function due to the prolonged nature of the training.
Right.
And we just couldn't escape it.
Right.
And so now it seems like there's a viable opportunity. For example, the CrossFit enthusiast who's discovering hormone and immune suppression because the workouts are too prolonged and too stressful.
Right. Well, there's some really large studies when we look at the metrics of people who exercise for, you know, what's called in academic journals recreation, meaning we choose to.
Right.
I don't really
not
call
getting
my,
paid, I guess.
I don't really call my workout recreation. Like I'm not, it's not like, you know, sipping a scotch on the beach.
Yeah.
It's hard work, but I do choose to do it. Nobody forces me to. And I like it. But people who have like manual labor jobs mm-hmm. or have to physically exert themselves all day long, their bodies are destroyed. Because they're more like endurance
repetitive
athletes.
Repetitive stress and things.
Yeah, it's just all day, like, beating on your body. Like, we are not meant to exert ourselves
in the warehouse,
any type of intensity for very long.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody has, other than endurance athletes, nobody has, like, a four-hour workout.
Yeah.
I mean, endurance athletes do.
Sure.
But, so it's really symbolic of how we exert ourselves, but it shouldn't be for like an extended period of time. I think, you know, like X3 happens to be very efficient. I didn't go for like, you know, like I got to design a workout that's 10 minutes. It just happened to be, you can stimulate half the body. We split the body two different ways. So there's you half the body one day, half the body the next day, because you want to wait for at least 36 hours. Mm-hmm. For those to recover. Now, you also could, in theory, do a full body workout, which would be just, I would be in really rough shape if I did that. Oh, that'd be devastating. And it would take me a lot longer than 10, you know, or even 20 minutes. It would probably take me an hour because I'd just be gasping for air between sets.
Yeah.
But you could, in theory, take both workouts and put them together. I talked to someone, probably the best group exercise group I've ever seen. It's a group called Health House, and they're based in Los Angeles. And they were pointing out that people can work out with great intensity for 10 minutes. And then they start to really just, and even like the endurance guys, they like immediately, like at the 10 minute mark. And I don't know, like the, I think their comment was people lose their motivation. It's like, no, they lose their glycogen. You know, it's probably psychological and mechanical. They go hand in hand. Like, well, you know, your body's just like, oh no. We're not going any further.
Dr. Tim Noakes' central governor theory
is
stating that there is some glycogen left in the muscle. It's not a glycogen depletion.
Totally.
It's
yes.
just your brain saying, Tim Noakes is you're down to the bottom of the barrel and I'm not going to let you go any further because I don't want you collapsing on the ground. And I could feel that that central nervous system fatigue. So many reference points where you've gone and you're like, F this, what am I doing in here? I'm
yeah.
You know, all of a sudden I've gone from super positive energy and motivation.
Right.
And now it's like, you're done. You're done when you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's in the middle of a race, unfortunately. Right. But when that point hits, I think in training you should steer far clear of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. And that's, here's the fitness industry telling you, no, do one more set. Because then you can really high five everyone around you on the other bikes and you know, push beyond.
Right.
And that's really destructive, especially to a recreational fitness enthusiast who wants to go have fun.
Have you ever, I mean, I don't know if this happens to endurance athletes, but like when I first started lifting, I was in a learning mode back then, but not like I have been in the last 10 years. So I wasn't a scientist. I was in high school. So, I was doing what everybody else is doing. And you got it. So I was the camera's on a horse. I was just doing the same nonsense crap everybody else was doing, you know, like five sets of five or five sets of ten or whatever. And I got to the point where I remember last couple sets of the workout. My workout was like an hour. I remember my ears starting to ring. Just ringing.
Yeah.
And I thought like, what? Like, I felt awful.
Yeah.
And my ears were ringing. I thought like, what is going on here? And I don't know if that was a sign of overtraining, but it certainly was my body's way of going, no. Yeah, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that there are little signs to tell you you're overtraining.
Sure. Especially before the workout starts. I always knew when I was going, you know, my head would knock around. It wouldn't feel right.
And,
you know, you just feel blah.
Yeah. There's a... Well, the San Francisco Marathon, I've had some friends run that, and I usually wait holding a cup of coffee because I slept in, you know?
Right,
just to see them as they cross the finish line. And sometimes, like, the gibberish that comes out of their mouth, like, they can't function.
Yeah.
You know, like, their head's not there.
Yeah.
And whereas I know when I do a workout with X3, I have laser focus. Like, I can go from my X3 workout right into a meeting. I might be a little bit out of breath.
Yeah.
But I have no cognitive performance issues at all.
So I guess you're getting a optimal fight or flight spike of hormones during the workout. It's over with in 10 minutes. Then you're returning to homeostasis and getting all these adaptive benefits rather than having those stress hormones become catabolic and destructive even to brain function. I know there's a direct association between that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a lot of stress hormone. Also...
It's not long enough to really get like, you in that.
Well, I mean, cortisol and adrenaline are seen when you have those overtraining issues. Uh-huh. Like, you know, an hour-long workout.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a 10, 15, or 15-minute workout, not really.
Okay.
No, I mean, I haven't tested this with X3 specifically, but I do know that people who do like a 10-minute workout, even with high intensity, like they're doing just 10 minutes all out and then they're done. Yeah. No.
You're sneaking in under the radar, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nice to know.
Yeah, you don't have that stress response. And this is why interval training, like, again, like people aren't explaining the science either at all or not even close to correctly, but it's not a steady state heart rate thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have the same cortisol upregulation and suppression of growth hormone that regular endurance training does.
Yeah.
So like I think, you know, for people who don't want to do strength training and, you know, just want to be lean and not muscular, intervals, they're cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as you don't go for an hour and 20 minute interval workout.
No. You do, you know, a couple like 2 minute bursts.
Yeah.
And then catch your breath in between.
Yeah. Yeah,
for
sure.
Yeah, that's
right
fine.
On.
Yeah. I would, if all I wanted to do was just drop body fat and didn't care about musculature in any way, that would be a way to go. Now, of course, there's high injury risk there.
Mm.
So, actually, I take that back. I wouldn't do that. I'd just do X3 because, the injury risk is just so low.
Yeah. Love it. Dr. John Jaquish, man. Hit it hard.
Yeah.
Fascinating insights.
Thank you so much.
You're out there on the cutting edge. I think we're compelled to listen, even if it's going against our rigid, fixed beliefs.
I my whole life I've been going against the grain.
Yeah, man.
Because like, 13 that. Years ago, I developed the bone density medical device, founded the Osteostrong Clinics. Yeah. And I was telling the whole pharmaceutical industry in bone density that they were wrong. And while nobody ever like wrote me a letter and said, thank you for straightening us out. Right. These people are brilliant. They're the top minds in their field. And they've done incredible things with the biochemistry of the pharmaceuticals, even the ones that have a lot of side effects. They do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And there's applications for even some of the higher risk drugs. Mm-hmm. Somebody's in their like late 90s. You know, can they take the one that has some cancer questions? Yeah, probably, because time is probably going to get them before cancer does.
Yeah,
seriously, that's exactly the logic when it comes to some of these prescriptions. Like, you know, you would never give teriparatide to a young person,
mm-hmm.
but teriparatide to a very elderly, very frail, like negative six T-score person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a candidate for teriparatide,
uh-huh.
at least as far as what I've read and what I've learned at some of the conferences that I've been at. So, they have their place, but I was so against the grain. I was like probably the only guy to show up that was a speaker, you know, under like 50. You know, and I was like in my 30s presenting this stuff.
Yeah.
And they just kind of looked at me like,
what
the hell is this guy doing here? Like talking about exercise? Like, that doesn't do anything. And in a way they're right because they determined that 4.2 multiples body weight is the minimum dosage to affect your hip joint of force.
Wow.
4.2 multiples your body weight. You're not getting that. You're not even getting that with weights.
Right.
You got to do it's impact or
jump off the ground. Yeah.
You got to jump off like a table to get
right.
That.
Yeah.
So actually you need to jump off something that's higher than 15 and a half inches.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I did the math.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So you can say that to a kid and they're like, "Oh, I'll jump off that."
Yeah.
But say that to somebody with osteoporosis, they will never do that.
Right.
That would be irresponsible completely.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's where the OsteoStrong devices came from because it's giving the benefit of high impact without the risks of high impact. And it was so against the grain. In fact, my PhD advisor told me, if you had developed this after finishing your PhD? Because I developed it first and then I went and did my PhD. If you went and did your PhD and then tried to develop this, you would talk yourself out of it. Huh. You'd have never launched this product because it's so different from the way the industry thinks. Now, I don't know if that's true because I know my father's developments were totally unconventional. Huh. He designed and built a lunar rover.
Oh, wow.
Him and seven other guys. Uh-huh. He was a NASA engineer, and then he worked for a number of different engineering contractors that were developing really new cutting-edge stuff. So he always had an approach of like, I think what he would say to me is, don't think people are going down the right path. Look at the problem and think of anything else that might address that problem than the way people are going.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
Because there might be a better answer there.
That's right. Yeah. Right on, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for watching, listening.
Awesome. Thanks.
Da, 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 da.
Thank you for listening to the show. We would love your feedback at getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. And we would also love if you could leave a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a hassle. You have to go to desktop iTunes, click on the tab that says ratings and reviews, and then click to rate the show anywhere from 5 to 5 stars. And it really helps spread the word so more people can find the show and get over themselves because they need to. Thanks for doing it.